Hello and welcome to this course on strategic planning for A and D firms. My name is Enoch Bartlett-Sears and I'm the publisher of Business of Architecture. This course was originally recorded as part of the Business of Architecture Summit in 2014. This course is registered with AICES for continuing professional education. Certificates of completion are available upon demand, and for AIA members, this course will be reported to AICES. Strategic planning for A&D firms. Our presenter today is Lisa Henry. Lisa Henry is the CEO of Greenway Group. She's committed to intercept new thinking about the future of the design professions that is innovative and relevant to a changing world. Lisa works with AEC firms to develop strategies to improve their business performance. As a trusted advisor to leading firms, her clients benefit from her combined expertise in design and business, especially in the areas of strategic planning, organizational design, and firm transition. Greenway Group recently helped the AIA publish the Foresight Report, forecasting trends that are going to be affecting the future of the design industry. In this course, you'll learn how to develop a strategic plan and how that plan can help catalyze prioritization and decision-making for your firm. In this course, you'll also learn how to align your strategic plan with the goals of staff members, if applicable. You'll learn the process of developing the purpose, direction, and goals and mission for each unique firm. You'll discover how to use the strategic plan as a catalyst for prioritizing and decision-making. You'll learn how to gain alignment of the strategic plan with staff members and understand how to develop and implement a business strategy that anticipates change and optimizes opportunities. With that, I'm going to turn the time over to Lisa Henry for the rest of the presentation.
Thank you. It's a total pleasure to be here, Enoch, and everybody. What I'd like to do is just let everybody know that strategic planning is at the top of my mind right now. Enoch, you mentioned that I am the CEO at Greenway Group. What you didn't mention is I'm the CEO as of September 1st of this year, so I have a new position. And what that means is I am quite immersed right now in strategic planning myself on behalf of our company. So I can totally relate to those of you who are out there immersed in the same thing. So why don't we go through this, and I'll tell you, first of all, where we're going to go today. We're going to look at, we're going to take 50 minutes, and then at the end, we'll take time for questions and answers, but we have the ability to throw your questions up as we go along the way, so please feel free to do that. We'll talk about why strategic planning is fundamental to your business success, and then we'll launch in with the very first step, which is getting ready for the process of strategic planning and your role in it as the leader of your company. The next thing we'll do is we'll go through step-by-step the processes, and we'll end it up with a logical framework where you can that you can plan within that relates to different buckets of professional practice and business issues that are relevant to architecture and design firms. So that's pretty much where I plan to go today, and I am so happy to be accompanying you on your journey. And here we are on our road. This highway, of course, is a metaphor. And my question, of course, is which way will you go? And as Lewis Carroll said, if you don't know where you are going, any road can take you there. But that just won't do in business, as you know. Why do we need a strategic plan? Well, because it gives us that direction and gives us it tells us which direction we're going in. It'll help us identify what it is that our firms bring to the marketplace that provides value for our clients and presents a specific vision to you and your direction of what your firm is going to look like in the future. In addition, it'll help you tremendously in measuring not only your interim goals, but also really shine a light on what your long-term goals are too. I've really benefited because it will define the strategies that'll help achieve those interim and long-term goals. And finally, why understanding responsibility and who's going to do all this is really an important part of it, because you can have a 50-point strategic plan, and if people aren't assigned responsibility, or if you're not able to have the capacity yourself, then you're going to be in a tough position. So assigning responsibility and accountability and applying a schedule to make it all happen is really what the fundamental basis is, why you, and whether it's a small company that you have, it's your own firm, you're just starting up, or you've been in business for a long time, or if you're a larger firm and have 20 employees or more, every architect should create what we at Greenway think is the most important design challenge, and that's the design of your own business. And I really invite you to think about this as we go through the process of think about it as a design challenge, because it is a design process and there isn't anything more important. There's no other project that's more important than this one. As an entrepreneur, you have to think about it as you as the leader. And this process is all about your company. And again, whether you have yourself as a sole practitioner or a staff, you are the one as the leader who decides where this company is going to go. Your company is going to go where you want it to, and you're in total control of that. And not only that, it needs your imprint. However, if you work with other people, we sure recommend that you involve as many other people in the company as practical in the planning process, and you really will end up benefiting from their ideas. Not only that, they'll be excited about working toward your goals that they have helped define. As a leader, you have to follow your passion when you're creating this plan and everything that you do, especially around the big picture pieces, the vision and the mission statement. That's where your passion and your imprint really comes in. And when you identify that passion and share a love for your work, many of these strategic planning decisions are going to make themselves. They'll end up evolving right out of your vision. And as a leader, it's your job to support your total and demonstrate your total commitment to following and supporting that ongoing planning process and the strategic plan. So my question now is, are you ready for that? Because when you enter into the zone of strategic planning, it really does imply change. And what's your thought about the status quo? Well, in business, the status quo means just what this image illustrates, flatline. In other words, dead, or just about to be. I don't know if you've ever said it, but every once in a while I'll say, oh, I just wish I could keep things just exactly as they are. You know, we all might say that, but in business, it's just the opposite. You really can't say that, because the status quo is the opposite of activity in business and generating growth and creating additional opportunities for you to connect to the economy, for you to self-actualize and provide great solutions for your clients and opportunities for growth for yourself and your staff. And I suspect that you didn't join in this CEU today and invest to talk about the status quo. No, I am sure that you're here because you're demonstrating your commitment to change and improve. And what is your appetite for change? Because that's what this is about. The status quo might work if this were the reality, but I don't know, when was the last time you had a project that came in not only on time, but under budget, and you were getting too much sleep all at the same time? I don't think that happens very often. So I think we agree that the status quo in business is probably not where we want to be. Remember that, yes, strategic planning implies change, and you don't strategically plan in order to stay the same. So if you want something in your business that you've never had, you're just going to have to do something that you've never done. And look at this effort by this little guy. It's Herculean. And how do you deal with change? And you have to ask yourself that question. And I'd like to just take a pulse check on that, you know, and ask if you, how have you implemented change successfully in the past? And have you been an advocate for change? If you work with other people in your office, do you encourage them and reward an introduction of new ideas in your business? And do your work colleagues embrace change? And finally, are you receptive to feedback and alternative ideas? And if the answer to most of these questions is yes, that's great. That tells you and tells me that you're ready for change. And if the answer is no, then it'll probably be more a stretch for you. But I still encourage you to certainly go for it and stretch. As the owner of a business, you really do have some serious reflection to do in the front, especially up front. I'm in the midst of all of this right now as our new CEO, and I'll tell you, the key is to start out with the biggest of questions. And it takes a lot of discipline in the day-to-day business to carve out the time to reflect on these macro, really macro defining issues, which will essentially set the stage for your firm in the years ahead. And thinking about things like, what is this business all about? And what's your vision of what the firm will look like in the future? What are your long-term and your interim goals? Do you want to work in your company and then just sell it someday? Do you want to bring in partners? What's special about the firm? What specifically are you trying to accomplish in your business? What culture does your company have, and what culture would you like to have? Are you a specialty firm, full service, production firm? And what do you bring your clients that adds value? You'll then get, after you answer some of those big questions, you'll get to even more granular questions like, what are the literal steps that are going to get you there, and who will be responsible for making it happen all within a certain time frame? So essentially, you're starting out with big thoughts, and then you're bringing them down into much smaller detail. So why don't we take a look at these steps in sequence? You know, I say it's pretty simple, and when you look at bubbles, like four different bubbles, yeah, you can answer these questions, and then it will all be simple, but each one of them has some things under it. But it's still pretty logical, especially as architects, because it falls into just that logical sequence that I think you're quite comfortable with. The hard part, again, is the discipline to design it and giving it as much attention and rigor that you would any other project. And I contend that you and your business are definitely worth it, and you've just got to just invest the time in developing that plan. Otherwise, I think it's like driving down the highway without a steering wheel. You just wouldn't want to do that in your business. So step one is like look about where you are right now, and we call it the as-is state. This step is really important because it can't without it you just can't develop anything coherent for the future, because it until everybody has a real accurate understanding of the present, not only what's happening in your business but what's happening in your client's business, you won't know where to take them, or you won't know where you're going. And it truly does take research to do that. And it takes looking within, too, to understand the financial and the condition of your firm. You know, sole practitioners kind of have it a little bit easier there, because you see everything in the current state of your firm. You see your finances. You see your capacity and your talent strengths. But I'll tell you that as a company grows, if that's in the plan, key people can become removed from parts of the company that they're not directly responsible for, and it becomes much harder for them to see the big picture. And it's very important when your company starts to grow, if it does, that they always have that big view in, and they know what their role is and where they fit in. And that strategic planning process really does enable them to connect to it all. The next step is, once you understand as is develop a future desire state. You know, what do you want to be? Which is really about your vision of the future. And now you have a gap between as is and the future desired state. And how you'll fill it is step three. And that is, what will we do to get there? And that's the plan itself. It'll define the goals and the strategies under them to accomplish that journey to your vision. And of course, we'll dive into that here. And then finally, accountability. That's the allocation of money, of time and talent and resources to get you there within a certain schedule. So it looks really simple on this, but why don't we take a bigger picture on some of the considerations within the architectural practice that you'll want to pay attention to. This is a really key step. I'm going to call it the environmental scan, which will look at five different spheres. It's part of that time investment that I mentioned earlier that you'll need to do to create a strong plan. This is an environmental scan of what is new out on the horizon and what's happening in all of these spheres that might have an impact not only on your business but also influence your clients' businesses. It helps us to keep them categorized, so what I'd like to do is dial them in a little bit more closely so you know what we're talking about. The first sphere, of course, is technology and media. And considering what's changing in technology, you really got to pay attention to that. It drives a lot of changes in design. How will you address these innovations as an architect, not only in your own office, but in the projects that you work on? You know, things like embedded technology, business collaboration tools, visualization technologies, and virtual and augmented reality and new tools that help help you tell clients the story of what their buildings look like and what they will experience. There's so much changing in this realm that's really important to keep your finger on the pulse of. And that's a critical part of the research that you need to get done beforehand. The other sphere is the buildings and sustainability sphere. And when you consider what is changing in the realm of business and sustainability and how it could impact your practice and your direction and your clients' requirements, it's really one of those that you've got to, again, keep your finger on the pulse of and understand what's happening. And, of course, some of the big issues you can see here, increased densification, this trend to urbanization, sustainable architecture and energy efficiency, net zero buildings. What are the design opportunities that are presented by our aging building and technology infrastructure? That alone has impacted the directions that firms have taken, increasing their work in the building renovation arena. And then the need for increased security for buildings and people and information. The next sphere that becomes important that impacts your practice and also impacts the business of your clients revolve around what is changing in the realm of the economy, certainly, demographics and politics. How could it impact your practice and your direction? Well, keeping up with the language of the changing nature of work, of workers and global influences is all part of that. And you have to anticipate and speak about these changes beyond space plan or aesthetic preferences, but how you'll approach and communicate design for multi-generation working and living spaces. And think about what your firm's commitment is to design for social impact and your own firm's stand on corporate social responsibility and what you're doing in the realm of pro bono projects. You know, what we've seen is volunteerism is really on the rise, and that's a good thing. And a lot of Generation Y, if you will, distinctly prefer, have demonstrated a distinct preference to work for companies and do business with companies who share their same values of corporate social responsibility. And we want to demonstrate that in our businesses and understand that is a very important business strategy. It's not just a good thing to do. It's part of business today. And then the next sphere that's really important is in the realm of materials, design, and construction. And consider what's changing in that realm and how it might impact your practice, your direction, and preferences that you make suggestions around to clients. There's a new language out there in material science, a new language in product design, and it's all around carbon neutral and sustainable products and different certifications. It's around smart materials and embedded sensors technology and so on, and nanotechnologies and biomimetic materials and all sorts of different building materials and finishes. The new language is around 3D printing and robotic fabrication and off-site modular constructed components. I mean, there's just a host of things to understand that are happening out there that will certainly affect the practice of architecture. And this particular area is right in your wheelhouse. It's in your backyard, and demonstrating leadership and being an expert in these areas just seems to be a real natural, but staying informed and always on the cutting edge is an important thing, and pushing the envelope there too. And then business practices and design methods sphere, considering what's happening here in the realm of your need and the client's need for different ways to be to have communication sent to them. How do you manage your clients, and how do you engage them in the design process? There's so many new methods that are going on out there, customer relationship management planning, and there are software tools that accompany that are really powerful, and they kind of set you free, because once you have a customer relationship plan in place, all you have to do then is execute it, and that's executing sometimes is a lot easier than creating the plan, and these tools can be very helpful. So challenge yourself in your own firm, and what you are doing here again is designing your own business process. And then the last thing around this scanning process, the external world scanning process, I want to invite you to consider is what's happening in the realm of competition. It's not insignificant. The competitive landscape has really changed for architecture firms. Real estate management companies, project management firms, they're not just emerging in the realm of as competition, they have emerged. Not only are they involved in the scope of service of A&D professionals and firms, but they're also hiring A&D professionals, and that's a real tax on practitioners coming and looking for jobs within A&D. Sometimes some of them will go to work for other types of firms. And the emergence of these firms into the process arguably keeps the architect at a greater distance from your clients without control over outcomes, as one of their primary roles is around value engineering. And when these firms stand between you and your client in that realm, that could be a real challenge. So if you haven't experienced it, it's out there. Some of the other non-traditional competition that you might have been exposed to in the world is innovation and design firms that are doing, well, firms like IDEO and Frog Design. I mean, they've entered into the realm of design consulting on design processes, of course, product design, but also service delivery, spatial prototyping, and interesting things like this, which, you know, might be in the realm of your practice. But just be aware that they're out there, and they don't look like an A&D firm, but they certainly are amping up their scope within that realm. And then finally, you know about these guys because you might be one of them. I love these guys, the emerging competition, the firms that are just starting out. And the interesting thing is some of them are just incredible because they've got a real high profile in the business, in some business press. They're speaking at great conferences. They're real active in social media, and they're, you know, they start small. They're nimble. They're lean. They've gotten great talent, and they appeal to an intriguing top-tier client base that are looking for innovation and new ways of approaching building projects. And in fact, innovation is part of their brand understanding and their emphasis on a kind of a different twist in corporate culture, and commitment to corporate social responsibility is really appealing to some real top-tier clients. So your strategy around marketing could address all of this, but from a competitive landscape, this is what it looks like on the outside. And this is the homework that I invite you to roll up your sleeves and do and think and interpret and how it would affect your company. Now, the other piece of the scan revolves something that's a little more close to home, and it is about your own financial internal dashboard, if you will, and we're showing it here. Showing a few of the buckets here on this beautiful 9/11 dashboard. And you got to think of it just like this, in fact, just like these gauges. They give us a read on the amount of fuel and the oil and the speed and electrical charges and all of that. Your company has the same sort of a dashboard if you choose to look at it that way. And you've got to have that information on your key performance measures relative to achieving your goals. I mean, it's your lifeline. And if you've identified any problem areas, well, you got to address them and focus them on how your firm is going to succeed. And what do you measure? You know, the fact is all of them aren't equally as important, and you don't have to have every one of them out in front of you on a dashboard, but you should pick a handful that are meaningful to you. I think these are pretty good. But there are, if you look at, you know, business books on practice, oh my goodness, they must have 20 or so metrics that you can apply to your business. And they all have some value, but I don't know that they all have equal value. And it becomes daunting if you want to start looking and measuring all of them. If you're not doing this sort of thing, start doing some of it and just bite off a few and then just keep them out in front of you all the time. And if you say that your accounts receivable, for example, is, you know, it's too high, you know, people are paying too slowly, just zero in on one of those as part of your strategic plan, and we'll look at that in a minute. But just pick off the ones that you can manage one at a time. And your profits are too low, well, pick that one and improve that over the course of a period of time, and improve that one, and then go into some of the others. But that's a nice way of doing it without getting overwhelmed, in my opinion. Some firms measure things like client retention, close rate probability. Some look at net revenue per employee. They look at a net multiplier. There's just a lot of things, overhead rates and so forth. But, you know, instead of getting overwhelmed with it all, depending on where you are in your business, just keep some of the more important ones out in front of you. So I'm just going to kind of say, how are you doing? Because we're going to launch into the actual process. But if there are any questions right now, thought I'd put it out there. Well, we'll keep on going. The strategic planning process kind of looks like this. I mean, you could illustrate it many different ways.
Lisa, right? Do you want to stop for a second and pause? Because there are a couple questions you could address.
If everybody can hop on, if they have a question, or we can wait to the end, whatever everyone's preference is. I just want to keep this on time.
Yep, absolutely. So Roberto was asking for some suggestions about, and I think we'll just take a small little break here and then we can continue, but one of your points was how to make sure it happens. Are you going to be talking about that later?
Oh,
or any
by
examples?
All means, Roberto. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
I will help you and help all of us understand how to make it happen.
All right. Well, we'll listen.
Okay. All right. So let's go through an outline of the planning process. And again, doesn't matter what site, if you're a one-person firm or if you're a large firm, these are the exact same steps. I think this is a life skill. So once you learn it, you can apply it to anything that you do, even your own personal life, frankly. You know, you just have to set aside to compile the information, ask information for employees. And I don't think it's a half bad idea, too, to get information from clients, you know, get their feedback, too, and all of this. You decide who will be involved in the planning retreat. If you're going to do it with yourself, it sure helps to have another person or two to bounce things off of. If you have a larger, you know, organization, it might help to hire an outside facilitator. I mean, that's a very common thing to have happen, and our company and others have made business out of helping firms through that process. Some firms go off-site where they can work uninterrupted, because the strategic planning process really doesn't deserve to be interrupted by what's happening and getting a set of drawings out that day. This is an investment in you, and it's top priority. It has to be top priority, and sometimes being off-site helps. You might want to, again, ask some people questions in advance to bring to the strategic planning session, and then hold your meeting and develop that preliminary strategy, which usually is on big sheets of flip chart paper, and then you'll take that and you'll have it condensed into a written plan. If it is over 2 pages long, preferably it's 1 page, and it's quite possible to have a great strong plan that's a one-page plan. Write that plan and finalize it, and then make sure anyone who has anything to do with your company internally has a copy of that plan. And it should be used on a daily or weekly basis with your, just keep in front of you when you're doing your financials, keep in front of it when you put your marketing hat on, keep in front of you when you're thinking about what new technology to buy. Keep it in front of you is the whole point. And then you just schedule quarterly sessions, and we'll look at a little mock-up of a format so you can kind of tick off where you are in the process. And after you, if you see things have to be adjusted, then you make those adjustments. For example, 2008, 2009, you know, if those of you were in practice then remember that, it was bad. And regardless of what your strategic plan said in early 2008, it changed radically at the end of that year and in the following year. So what you want to remember is it's not immutable. It has to be adjustable to tweaks and things that are happening out there in any one of the spheres that we mentioned about mentioned earlier. Okay? Okay, the vision, this is, remember, we start out with the big and then we're going to get smaller. Well, this is the biggest of big. It's about you. It's about the future direction of your firm. And what do you see as the desired ideal vision for your firm? And what do you see for your company and yourself in the future? And sometimes we'll frame it as like this. In 2020, my firm will, and then fill in the blank, and you see your role as blank. This is a firm that I wanted to share what their vision was. This is what they wrote. My firm is dedicated to creating affordable, advanced housing alternatives and is a renowned leader worldwide. I, as the owner, am creating opportunities to improve lives through our design work, and for our employees to be successful and make a great living doing what they love here. So, okay, the firm might not be doing that today, but that's their vision of what they want to do. So when you're thinking about what your vision is, think about what the aspiration is in the largest terms, that you want to be the renowned leader worldwide, improving lives through your design work and creating opportunities for people to do what they love. You see, these are really macro, but that's the whole point of the vision. And you know, it's very personal, I think, to you as the owner. Now let's, you know, we bring it down one level from the vision, and this is the vision, by the way, is internal. That's for you. It's for anybody that you work with. It's not for your marketing people or your own yourself. You don't put it out there for others. The mission, on the other hand, is something different. And this is a firm who designs residential housing in urban areas, and this is what they said. They said their mission was, we satisfy our clients' needs for innovative, sustainable spaces which result in improving business for owners and delighting residents who live in our spaces. Okay, this mission statement and the point of the mission statement is, this is what's happening at the firm now. It might be buffed up a little bit, but it's all about what the firm is doing now. They've already accomplished this to some degree. So they're putting it out there, which means they can use it in a marketing sense. They can put it on the materials, on their website, or however they want to do it. So the subtle difference between the vision and the marketing is the mission states what you have already been accomplishing, and you're doing it now, but you just want to do it better and more of it. And the vision is about what you aspire to be in the future. I think I mentioned that firms may change their vision over a course of time as they achieve these amazing aspirational goals. They'll start living their vision. And when they do, they deserve to have another vision to raise them up even higher. That's the point of a vision statement, very personal to the owner, but it just as high of an aspiration as you can dream. It's about your dreams. And the mission is about things that you've already accomplished but just want to do a little bit better. Okay? So you got big, and then you get into big. But now what we're going to do is take it down to another level of granularity in the form of goals. And they're pretty simple. And we'll talk about some examples. But let's look at the attributes of a goal. They're specific, they're measurable, they're achievable, they're not pie in the sky is what that means. They're relevant to your practice, and they have some sort of a schedule wrapped up around them. The mistakes that we see in firms creating goals are these on the right-hand side. They're too big, meaning they're just too vague and broad. There are too many of them. They're not written down, which means it's like driving without a steering wheel. That metaphor really comes to mind. When they're not written down, you're just all over the place because something else is going to supplant it and you're going to forget about it. So that's that piece, that's that rigor to bring to the process. And then again, they're just not specific enough. Firms have goals that sound something like this. We want to expand the scope of service to existing clients. We want to increase their proportion of higher education clients. I mean, if you're in that market. We want to enter into new geographic markets, or we want to grow our staff in a certain realm, or things can be goals that relate to. We want to establish performance metrics within the firm, or we looked at that dashboard a couple of slides ago. We want to establish a financial performance metrics. That would be a real good goal. Okay, so those are ideas of goals, but let's take a look at them and how we could categorize them. We like to look at things at my company in the form of, when it comes to architecture practice, we categorize it as marketing area of business, operational area of business, the actual practice of architecture, and then the finance of it all. Marketing is getting the work, and operations supports it, and design practice is doing it, and then finance is making a profit, which is, you deserve it. So some thought starter goals are in marketing. Let's initiate a PR program. By the way, PR, it's other than time, it's generally free. It doesn't take a lot to implement PR. Public relations is not paid advertising. It's public relations. It has to do with getting exposure for your knowledge, expertise. It's not about ads. So just consider that as a business starter. Operations, some goals to think about are, again, establishing project metrics. We'll have no project loss. Meaning we won't lose money on projects. We want to reduce overhead by X percent. Some practice goals could be we want to develop our interior design or landscape architectural services, perhaps. We want to expand the depth of our project management experience. We want to expand our project scope. These are all just examples of some goals that you can start out with, at least consider. In finance, we want to have profitability at 15% for all projects. We want to budget and track all of our projects. This may sound pretty fundamental, but there are firms that don't. And, you know, if you want to do it and you're not doing it, this is the time that you could start looking at that. You want to have a positive cash flow, and we want to increase your percentage of profitable projects. This framework, this method of bucketing some goals in each one of these areas, we find can be extremely helpful. It gives some organization to the process, and sometimes it helps. It just frameworks, of course, as you know, always helps to have structure. Okay, so you've written out, you've brainstormed through it, you've picked out a couple. It doesn't have to be in every category, but let's say you have two or three categories you want to achieve a couple of goals under. What do you do next? Well, I would just give myself a pat on the back because you've really gotten through a pretty big process just by identifying those goals that are important to you. You might have a lot of them, but now you're going to have to start the culling process. When you look at the current business and practice environment, you know you can't do them all if you have too many of them. You have to understand what your capacity is, what your resources are. So what do you do next in order to help you ascertain really what's going to stick and what's going to fall through the cracks? Again, the budget piece starts to become really important. Looking at where you are today and what your financials are, you're going to have some hard choices to make. But that's okay because we can tick off your goals, and then once one of them is accomplished, you start moving down the line, and then your new goals can start to take their place. And that can happen within the course of a year. Sometimes it only takes 3 months to accomplish a goal that you've identified as important, and that's good. But have some backup goals. That's a really good thing. And looking at skills. So here's a framework that this might help. And again, this is just a mock-up, but it gives you just a schematic of the way you can write this out. You know, on the left-hand side, you have the goal. Initiate a PR program. That's a marketing goal. That's what that target means. And then you go down and you have another goal. Add a landscape architecture practice or person. And then you have a financial goal to raise the profitability to 15%. Those are all just great goals. So now what you do is develop the tactics, the steps. Roberto, this is where it's going to happen. You develop the steps that will help you get there. For example, initiate a PR program. Well, it's pretty broad. Now these tactics start to dial it in. The first thing you do is make a list and develop contacts in digital and print media, get their editorial calendars and start submitting information, articles to them. Then you've got to write the articles on cost savings, for example, integrated project planning as an example. And then another tactic to get you into this PR program is attending an AIA conference to present your expertise, as these are all examples. And then you start moving down the line, who is going to do that? Well, you put a person, it's probably you. We put our names in there. We figure out what the budget is and be realistic about it, because you just have to be. And then you put a date where it's all going to, that you would like to see this happen within. And these are kind of drop-dead dates. This becomes an agenda for your next business meeting. So at every business meeting with yourself or whomever else, you bring this little matrix and you set it down, and essentially it's a schematic, but you get the point, I hope. So now we have some best practices. I want to go, you know, people we speak with talk about how are we going to develop our tactics, and you know, you can read the slide. I won't read it, but I'll just make some comments as you're scanning them. Marketing is costly, and how you get the work, you know, these marketing tactics need to be really at the top. And for firms that are just starting, particularly, there are two basic ways. You can process market or network market. And process marketing is responding to a bid or in a competition. And, you know, the effectiveness of that is very questionable at times. It's very hard to differentiate yourself when you're responding to a bid with 10 other firms. As opposed to network marketing, which is targeted on your business network, and it's proven to be a much better alternative tactic than just being there in the presence of a lot of other competitive firms where you don't have an edge. In that light, you'll want to develop tactics to address business and relationship building and adjust your budget accordingly, and you know, around things like networking within various organizations, or client-based organizations, and entertaining and things like that. And it would also include time and communications material development and collateral and social media strategies, et cetera, and public relations and so forth. And then professional practice is about doing the work. So there are tactics around this that you can develop within the realm of practice, and they relate to the current service offering that you had. Is one of your goals to grow the capabilities of your firm in new areas, like landscape or something? Well, you know, you develop those skills within your firm yourself or hire them and assess that. And you want to use, you know, start to consider what your technology tools are to communicate to clients in the realm of professional practice also. That becomes really important. And then finances, when the firm's financial metrics are lagging, you've got to make sure you have a goal related to improving that, as we said. In our previous example, we said it's our goal to increase the overall profitability by 15%. Well, if you're in the realm of low profits, you've got to ask yourself, why? Do we have the right talent working on the project? Are they taking too long doing the work? Is that why the profitability is low? Well, a tactic might be, I mean, just might be, to contract out some of that work and regain that time to more productive activities. You know, simply having more projects in and of itself is not an effective tactic unless you tie it to a profit level. And you've got to know what your profits are on projects, and I hope you do, because design is a time-based business, and you need to have the answer to that question. You've got to know what your profit levels are. And let's say you don't know. Well, then one of your top goals ought to be related to not just increasing your profitability, but just determining what it is. And one of the tactics could be, let's implement a time tracking system and a project management tracking tool to help you get there. So you know you've got the problem, you set a goal to respond to it, and then you put certain specific tactics in place, and how much can you afford on all of that? So it all starts to get more granular. Okay. And then finally, in operations, I would just suggest that you always look at the operational issues as you're developing tactics. When it comes to people, what do you need to add skill-wise? Do you have, if you're planning to grow a particular area, do you have the cash flow to support ramping up staff or covering non-billable staff? And that's another way to in considering outsourced contractors to maintain your flexibility and thinking of training and development for yourself or other people. If you're adding Deltek or any other project management planning or BIM tools, you've got to learn it, and that takes an investment that you have to account for. And then the business processes and policies related to internal communications and client communications are all within the realm of operations that you can develop tactics around. And then always in technology, the best you can afford is it's money well spent. And then if you're adding people, that's great, but a tactic might be is to consider adding a physical environment to go along with that. So those are some of the buckets. I just want to remind us that we, you know, we had the four questions on the right-hand side. Where are we? What do we want to be? What will we do to get there, and how will we make sure it really happens? And the steps it took are the environmental scan. Who do we want to be is completely up to you, and that's your vision, and developing a mission. And the goals are, what will you do to get there? And the tactics are, how will we make sure it really happens by assigning accountability to all of the steps that will make it happen? So I'd like to end by asking you to remember the design enterprise model as a framework for developing your strategic plan action steps. And when you consider your firm within this framework and develop goals and tactics to address them, to improve the realms, these realms in your business, it's really strong. So whether you're a one-person startup company or a large firm, really the process is the same. And my wish is that you begin now to design a plan for the most important project of them all, which is the design of your own firm. And I thank you tremendously for joining, for joining into this summit on strategic planning. And if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer.
All right, Lisa, thank you. So yes, we do have some time. We're scheduled to go till about another, you know, we have another 15 to 20 minutes, and, you know, it just depends on the kind of questions we have. I'd also, and I'm sure Lisa's willing to answer any questions related to what she does in terms of how she helps firms, or some of the experiences she's had, or other business questions you might have for her, because she's a great resource. So while we have her on the line, let's take good advantage of this opportunity. Lots of great comments here. Lisa, I just want to share some of them with you. Ruben said, this is the topic I was hoping to hear. Just great, pure oxygen to my company. And,
Ruben.
Yeah, he's actually, check this out. He says he's attending from Cozumel, Mexico, down in the Riviera Maya.
Oh, love it.
How about we do the Business of Architecture Summit next year, down at your place, Ruben?
So yeah, I'm for that.
Yeah, Lisa, you're up for that?
Yeah, by all means.
Patricia was just saying maybe you could, he doesn't understand very well the difference between professional practice and operations. Would you like to expound on that a little?
Sure. You know, I think about professional practice as the actual work of architecture. You know, as opposed to operations, which is really around the infrastructure that you have in place that supports the actual work. You know, I think about operations as the people and how they're supported through communications processes within the firm. I think about the skills and the skill development of the people and programs that you might put in place for yourself to keep you on the edge. You know, again, it's all interconnected, there's no question, but, you know, if you're implementing new technology, for example, from an operations standpoint, it definitely plays out in how that might improve the professional practice of the firm. But they're interconnected. The actual technology might be related to the people, and the technology, but it will augment and enhance the professional practice at the same time. When you think about your business processes and around client communications, particularly, that has a lot to do with you know, how they're supported and what they're communicated in terms of their, you know, maybe not the marketing material, but once they're a client, what happens to what does that experience of being a client to your firm look like? That's an operational issue. When they receive your monthly billings, for example, do they just look at that with a blank look on their face, or do they look at that and it's a user-friendly document and they completely understand where they stand within the process? That really is an operational issue. So you could see it connects to marketing in some way, but, you know, you could categorize these in many different ways. And operations, again, goes back to the technology piece, too. That's very strong. Whether you outsource things within the company, that's an operational issue. For example, your printing, your model making, your, you know, specs, accounting, and things like that. Whether these things are outsourced or whether they're kept in-house has to do with the operational aspects of the practice. One of the best practices that we've seen from an operations standpoint is kind of intriguing, and it connects to people very directly, but it's around the actual contract that is written that goes to the client. How strong is it? What does it look like? Is it user-friendly? Are all the people on the project team aware of it? You know, some firms write it and they never look at it again. But I invite you to consider keeping that project contract out in front of all the staff, people that are aware of this, so they know what you've committed to. That contract is your promise to the client that your firm is going to deliver in this way. And having that contract out in front of your staff, who's working, you know, the project team, I should say, is an intriguing operational issue you might want to consider.
Thank you, Lisa. So a couple other questions here. Sean, who's calling in from Florida, I think, says, when should we think about looking to the outside for help in the strategy area, and when should it be internal? In other words, you know, should we be a 10-person firm before we look for outside help, or is it just a financial decision?
Yeah, it is a financial decision, because you can – I'll tell you, I have this wonderful new company that just starting out, and he is one person, and we're helping him. The fact that he reached out is – it's a wonderful thing. I mean, I'm so grateful, because I know that he's going to get everything set. He'll have a framework to take his business forward for the next 5 or 10 years. And I thought it showed tremendous maturity and insight that he reached out for assistance. You know, he's a great, great architect. Has he ever had any business experience? The answer is no. He really wants to be successful, and he wants to not waste his time doing things that are that aren't going to give him some sort of a return. And, you know, what is important? He needs help prioritizing. And, okay, so he came to our company. We're helping him. But I don't think it's a matter of scale. I think it's a matter of what you need. And, you know, I suppose it's naive to think that it's not also based on what you can afford to pay, but it is definitely something to consider at any scale.
Yeah, and I just like to pipe in, if I may, here. So one of the things that I've come to learn about running and owning a business over the past several years, and I'm interested in other people's experience with this, I used to be a big-time penny pincher. In other words, the way I measured my profitability was by how much money I saved. So I always looked at investments from the perspective of, hey, how much is this going to cost me? And so it was like, you know, cutting off my right arm to spend money. Since that time, I've realized that really successful people that are able to get phenomenal results know how to invest their money wisely based upon the return they're going to get. So I think that might relate a little bit to Sean's question in terms of the strategy. You know, should we invest in outside help for our strategy? Well, it just depends on how much money could you potentially make by having, or how much better is your life going to be if you have a strategy in place? Whereas, you know, where will you be next year if you don't make that investment? So, you know, in my own personal life, for instance, someone mentioned a coach. You know, I have a personal coach that I'm working with right now, and it's a very hefty expense. He's not cheap.
Yes.
But I'm happy to do that because he's helping me so much to keep me accountable and push me forward, sort of the same thing that I talked about yesterday with the mastermind group. So, Lisa, would you like to comment on that?
Well, I just think it's wisdom, but it's not, an investment, and as a result, that means you're not going to be able to do something else, and that's true. That's just how it is. However, it's about choices, and if it's a question of you have to intentionalize your business and make your decisions based on your intentions. If you want to grow and improve and you can't do it alone, then you know, you've got to think about how you're going to get assistance within the firm. It's easy to say it, but it's not that easy to do it. I believe that when people are reading books about business and they're talking to people and participating in this Business of Architecture Summit, it's because they want to have the connectivity to other people who have more or different experiences that could shed light and insights to help. So, you know, there are many methods of getting help these days, and it's one-on-one or it's a community like this. You know, do what you can, but the fact is that you're doing something here today. You've reached out, and we're all gathered around our computers talking about how we're going to help one another improve.
Thank you very much, Lisa. So I'm just, let's see if there's any other comments here. Any other specific questions for Lisa? And wait for those to tie in here. Seems like people enjoyed the presentation very much. And we'll wait a few more minutes here to see if any other questions roll in. Now, Lisa, if people do want to reach out to you, you know, what is your email address? Because I don't see it on that last slide there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could have put it there too, couldn't I?
Yep.
My email address is simple. It's lhenry@greenway.com. Or I'm sorry, not .com, it's .us.
Okay, great.
It has a twist at the end, it's .us.
Yeah, that makes you different, makes you remember it.
Yeah, and it's greenway.us.